Springfield, Iowa, and beyond.
Grassroots, listener-supported, community-powered, and solar-powered radio broadcasting live from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. And this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
And we are in a January thaw, which is, Iowa is notorious for having a January thaw, and that's what we're having, and it's wonderful. And it gives us a breather before February storms hit again, but it really is a beautiful day, and we hope everyone's enjoying it that's here, and wherever you are, enjoying it. We have a really interesting book today, and the author is Kara Ruda, and this book is a USA Today best-selling, multiple award-winning author of contemporary fiction. Her novels include The Goodbye Year, Here, Home, Hope, All the Difference, and In the Mirror. She is also the author of the best-selling short story Mother's Day, as well as the Laguna Beach series and the Indigo Island series. Okay.
All right.
And this book is, well, I couldn't put it down. I couldn't put it down because I wanted to find out what happened.
And Kara's work has won numerous awards, including the Best Book Award and Reader's Choice Award.
She lives in Southern California with her family and is at work on her next novel. And when I checked her out online, she does some things other than writing, too. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Kara.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. So we're having a little technical difficulty here. My mic wasn't working. I'm going to switch to a different mic. See if that works. Hold on. All right. Yeah. Nope. That one doesn't seem to be working either. Okay. So here we are. Okay. Mom and I are going to share a mic. That's the problem with small town radio. It's wonderful in many ways, but you do sometimes run into technical difficulties, and it's probably true with any radio. So, Kara, tell us a little bit about how you started writing novels.
Well, I'd always known, I think most writers know that they want to write, and so it took me a while. I had a job, so that I had to work, live, and I never really thought that I guess I didn't have the self-confidence to try to go for it at a younger age as far as just sitting down and writing a novel. So I kept busy with working in advertising and marketing and running a couple companies and having four kids. And I wrote my first book, which was a women's book for women entrepreneurs called Real You Incorporated, Eight Essential for Women Entrepreneurs. And so I went around the country telling women that they should put their passion into action and live the life of their dreams. And all of a sudden I looked around and I'm like, wait, you always wanted to write a novel. So that's when I finally sat down and wrote my first novel back in 2010.
So not that long ago.
No, not really. I mean, I've been writing for magazines and newspapers, and I had a column and the city newspaper and all that good stuff, but I never, not that long ago. It took me a while to just get the confidence to go for my dreams.
And, you know, the book that we're discussing today is called Best Day Ever, and this is novel number what for you?
I know, I'm bad. I think it's number nine.
Number nine?
Wow. Yeah. Wow. But it's that's really something, I'll tell you.
Thanks. Well, yeah, it's the first, like, big press, traditionally published hardcover. So it's like, I would say it's like my biggest novel to date, which is fun.
And can you tell me how long it took you to write it, or?
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I feel like it was about, you know, it takes about a year to get the thing really gelled. But this character, the kind of narcissistic character, is a male, and it's a first-person story, as you know. And he pretty much popped into my head fully formed, which was kind of terrifying and fun at the same time.
Well, that's the way it reads. You know, you just got to go. You just got to go with it. And that's what I did. I didn't even put it down hardly. So that's,
I'm
love
so
those kind of books.
So, did the idea come from some, like, news report or something, do you think? Or was there something that sparked this character of Paul Strom?
Yeah, I mean, I try to figure out where his voice came from, and the best I can tell is I had a really great string of really bad male bosses. So I kind of feel like he's an amalgamation of all of them. So he definitely has little bits and pieces of all my worst bosses in him.
And, you know, one of the issues that you deal with in the novel is sexual harassment, which is very timely right now.
Mm-hmm.
Was this as much present in the news when you were writing, or did you kind of foresee that?
Well, you know, back I was vice president of marketing for a national service business and had to file a class action lawsuit for gender discrimination and sexual harassment. So that was back in the late 1990s. So it's been pretty much on my mind since I started my career. To me, it's wonderful to see the Me Too movement and everything that's happening in this third wave of feminine power. But for me personally, it's kind of been a topic that I've been in tune with for a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that that Paul's, I feel like he's a lot like a lot of these men who are being called out who really seem to believe that their advances are always welcome and the feelings are always mutual. And do you think you have to be a psychopath to like Paul Strom to believe that, or is it more common than that?
I think it's more common than that. As we see, it's very culturally embedded, kind of this entitlement feeling. And I think there's degrees of it among men, certain types of men, not all men, but definitely certain maybe types of men and men in power can get this way. I think it's accentuated if you're a narcissist, and then it's even more accentuated if you are some kind of psychopath or sociopath, whatever Paul is. Yeah.
I think psychopath.
I think he definitely qualifies.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think so, too.
But, of course, we don't know that starting out, and we don't want to give too much away because
we don't.
Because the novel is based on this unreliable narrator concept. Tell us, have you ever done a novel with an unreliable narrator before?
The closest I have is, it's called All the Difference, and I have three characters in there, and it's three different women who are the voice of the story, and one of them is unreliable, so I have done it before. I haven't had a story where an unreliable narrator carries the entire story. So that was kind of unique and fun and challenging in its own way, because with unreliable narrators, the key is to keep track of their lies, because you know they're lying, but as an author, I had to keep track of them because I don't plot out everything. I just kind of let the story unfold. So that was the hard part.
Oh, so you don't know how it's going to end until you get there?
Exactly.
Wow. That's even better. That's even better because you know, you take the reader along with you. And I really did enjoy this book because I couldn't put it on, even though the character is not my idea of terrific, but
yeah, he doesn't warm your heart, that's for sure.
No, he doesn't.
No, but he's intriguing. And the funny thing is that I kept hoping that he was actually better than he seemed.
You must be a nice person.
When you were writing, did you ever think, well, maybe he's not so bad?
No. I always... Yeah. No, he was pretty much who he is from the beginning in my mind. I didn't actually know how bad he was, but I knew he was pretty bad.
So do you say you don't plot out your books? So tell us a little bit about how, do you always just start with kind of a voice and a character?
Yeah, I like to, I mean, in the best case scenario, which best day ever falls into, it was like a gift. So in my favorite way to write is a title comes along and it just kind of floats in my head for a while. And then all of a sudden a character pops into my head that fits the title, and then we're off and running. And that, you know, it's kind of like one of those once in a blue moon things when all of that comes together at the right time, and then the voice is strong enough to carry a whole novel, and that's what happened with Paul.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Kara Ruta, author of Best Day Ever. This is her ninth novel. Now, you mentioned that this is your first traditionally published novel. So tell us a little bit about your path to publication, how you published the earlier ones, and how that helped you get to the traditional publishing.
Yeah, I guess it's probably half my fault that I have such a weird publishing story, but I don't have a lot of patience. So publishing traditional means requires a lot of patience. So with my first novel, I had a great agent, and she went to market, and we got close to selling it, and then we had all these. It just takes a really long time, and I think when someone's coming from a business background and kind of used to moving things along, that's when I decided, okay, I'm just going to publish this. So I found a great publishing company called Greenleaf Book Group out of Texas, and they worked with me and published it. They helped with the cover and all that kind of stuff. So great distribution, and so that's how my first book came out, and it was really well received. It was awesome. And then my next book, All the Difference, and like three subsequent books I self-published. I'm like, all right, I'm going to try it. It was right when all the self-publishing platforms were coming to light, and it was kind of fun and almost becoming an entrepreneur again and learning the new business and a process of getting a book from, you know, start to finish. So that was great. And then my last book before this one was called The Goodbye Year, and I worked with another small press, Spark Press. And then when this one came about, I'm like, you know, all right, I'm going to go back to trying the traditional route again. And I had an agent, and she and I were working on a women's fiction book, which is kind of what my goodbye year was. Although I will say dark women's fiction, but still what they call women's fiction. And Paul popped into my head, so I wrote this book, and I called Katie, and I said, okay, I've got a new story for you to read. It's a male protagonist, and it's really dark. And she's like, oh, I don't read those. I can't read that. Nope. I'm like, oh, no. No, but I think it's really good. So I sent it to my beta reader, who's a friend of mine, and she stayed up all night reading it and called me, and she said, you know what, tell Katie if she doesn't read this, she's going to be sorry. So I called Katie, I'm like, oh, come on, just give it a try. And so the next thing you know, she stayed up overnight reading it.
Yep, I believe it. I believe it.
Yeah, so then she turned around and sold it to a big traditional publishing house, HarperCollins, and the division is Harlequin, and they bought it. It was so exciting. So that was a great story of success, and kind of, I hope not once in a lifetime, but really exciting.
Well, I think the first time's probably the hardest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so. I think, yeah. You know, and it's just a tough industry, and it's hard to break in, and it's hard to stay, I think, and I don't know. So it's exciting. So then my editor called me, and she's like, oh, good news. We're going to make it hardcover. I'm like, get out. And then she called again, and she's like, oh, and now you're going to lead our new imprint. I'm like, get out. I didn't even know what that meant. And so, yeah, so it's all been a dream come true. They sent me to BA, and so it ended up being the lead title for a new imprint that they launched called Graydon House. So that was exciting, and, yeah, it's just been a dream come true.
Wow. Well, congratulations, Kara. You're listening
to
Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Kara Ruta, author of Best Day Ever. Now, in your jacket cover blurb, it says you're a USA Today best-selling author. So which book made the USA Today bestsellers list, or books?
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. So that was for a romance title. So I went from women's fiction into the romance arena, which was really great, too. One of my friends had started her own publishing company in the romance area, so I decided, oh, that would be fun to write. So I wrote a couple of beach setting romance stories, and one of those hit the USA Today list. It was kind of a compiled group of us that put books together into a set. So, yeah, that was awesome, too. See, that's the thing with this writing life. You just never know. You just never know what's going to resonate. And if you don't give up, that's the key.
Well, that's true. And everything that you do, you could build on. So even though, you know, some of your earlier work was nonfiction with the Real You Incorporated, and it looks like you did one for authors, Real You for Authors, Eight Essentials for Women Writers.
That's just free on my website, yeah.
Oh, cool. So what advice are you giving, you know, what business advice are you giving to women authors?
Well, it's much like what I say to all women entrepreneurs, is that you need to put your passion into action, and it's never too late to live the life of your dreams. And most of the book is based on my background's marketing and branding, so I really believe in the power of personal brand and then taking your brand out to the marketplace as a unique, resonating entity. So in my marketing book for women authors, I talk a lot about that as well, as making sure you have a strong, unique personal brand and how you articulate that, not necessarily through your stories, but how your stories are packaged and marketed, how you present yourself when you go out into the world, whether it's a writer's conference or giving a speech, or even if you're just having a signing in a bookstore, how that all comes together to kind of create your personal brand and your business brand.
And it sounds like you really did that with this Real Living, the first female-focused brand in real estate and the industry's first consumer portal. And that you won the Stevie Women in Business Best Entrepreneur Award, Entrepreneur Magazine's 50 Fastest-Growing Women-Led Businesses, one of Forbes' top 50 women in business to follow on Twitter, and the Kiwanis International Humanitarian Award. So, and that's for starting the first homeless shelter for families in Columbus, Ohio. So, Kara, tell us a little bit more about your nonprofit work.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a big believer in giving back, because you always get returns 20 times more than what you give as a person. But anyway, my first job in Columbus, when I grew up most of the time in Columbus, and I went away to college and then came back, and I was working at my first ad agency with my first bad boss, and thanks, Myron, and I read about my homeless families and how in most cities across the country at this time was true that if you were a family and the last thing you had was your group staying together, if you chose to move into a shelter, whether it's because of the weather or you had no place to go, the mom and the younger kids went to the women's shelter, and the dad and older boys, if you were a boy over 16, you had to go to the men's shelter. So you're splitting up the last thing these people had to depend on. So anyway, I'm working in that agency. I'm like, we've got to do something about this. So I went around to all the shelters, learned about the situation, and then marshaled a group of young people, and we actually worked together, and it took us a few years, but we raised the money and did a lot of public service announcements, because a lot of us were in marketing and PR, and ended up founding the first shelter for homeless families in Columbus. So it was a really rewarding experience, and we started out with just being able to hold holiday parties for the kids every year, and getting, it was a very, it was a great experience, and homelessness is something that we should all care about and help with however we can.
Well, you definitely seem like the opposite of your character.
I hope so.
Yeah. Was it hard?
Oh, creepy guy.
He's a creepy guy. Was it hard for you to live in his head for the months that it took to write this book?
Yeah, that is the interesting part, because when you're writing a novel, at least for me, like, the character's always in the back of your mind no matter what you're doing. So even if you're out with your husband or out with friends, you're like having creepy Paul in the back of your head. So that is kind of strange, but it's also, in a strange way, and it sounds weird, cathartic in a sense, because I did have encounters with people like Paul in my past. So writing him out, it was a great way to kind of get him out of my head and into the world.
Do you feel like you're also kind of expressing your own darker side?
Maybe. I think I've always been intrigued by what goes on behind closed doors of seemingly perfect lives, because too many people, especially in the suburbs in the U.S., at least that's my experience, and that's where I come from, try to pretend everything's perfect, and nothing's ever perfect. No one's ever perfect. No marriage is ever perfect, and if it seems too perfect, it's probably really terrible. So that's where my, I guess that's where my point of view comes from, and it's not necessarily that it's always super dark like Creepy Paul, but there's a lot of sorrow and heartache that's hidden behind the perfect facades.
Yeah, there's a saying that no family can hang out a sign that says there's no trouble here.
Right, exactly. And that, and it's so weird because we all know that intuitively, but I think we forget it in our, and especially now with social media where everybody can filter their feed and make their lives seem so perfect. It's hard and it's sad. And it's almost like there's a whole bunch of unreliable narrators now out there in the world making their lives look like perfection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it just me or is it, I find when I have someone on my timeline who is always posting these perfect things, it makes me suspicious.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Maybe they are having a great life, and if they are, awesome. Some people don't like to share sadness publicly, so I get that too. So, I mean, some people kind of overshare sadness, I think, and then that's,
well, that's
not so
true.
Fun to see in your well. There's probably that happy medium where, you know, not oversharing bad and not sanitizing everything, so it's always good.
Yeah, there probably is, but it may be a little hard to find that happy medium sometimes. So
I
like what you say about with social media, we're sort of all becoming unreliable narrators of our own lives to some extent. Do you, in your blog, I know you wrote about some of the other authors or other books that have unreliable narrators that were your favorites. You want to talk about some of those?
Yeah, who did I list? I can't remember.
Well, you've started out with Gone Girl by Gillian
Flynn. Yeah. I mean, that kind of is the classic of this generation, right? That kind of started this whole domestic suspense back up again, I guess. And, I mean, it was so shockingly real feeling. I think that's why it resonated with people so well, and just the fact of having the two of them both lying all of the time, it was so great. I mean, that was a great book and a great example. I mean, I think that's the book that all of us who are in this kind of domestic suspense arena look up to and want to try to, you know, get as close to as possible, that kind of shock value and the kind of, wow, that could actually really happen.
And then, of course, in a similar vein, The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins. And it's you get pretty far into that book before you realize that maybe the narrator isn't telling the whole truth.
I know. And see, that's beautiful, too. And now what's hard, being the author who's my next book, is that there's so many educated readers now, right? So you guys are all so sophisticated in what you're expecting out of one of these books that it's almost comical if you hear like editors talking, well, yeah, but they did this. Well, I tried to sneak up on readers these days.
Yeah, could you repeat that again? We had a little bit of a blank out on the phone. So you were saying
I was saying it's getting harder and harder to fool readers now with the success of Gone Girl and Girl on the Train and all the other novels that have come out in the last few years since then, that the stakes are really ramped up. And readers, you'll see on reviews like, oh, I knew that was coming. Oh, I expected that. I've read that before. So, as an author, it's really hard to try to fool people anymore.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, the twist, you want, you know, in any kind of suspense, you need a twist. And if it's completely predictable, it's not much fun.
Exactly. Yeah. And with it just seems like there's so many books coming to market that the twists are getting even bigger and more of them. And yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think you did a good job, because even though we realized pretty early on that all is not as it seems, I didn't expect it to go quite the way it did.
Good.
Me neither. I was that's why I couldn't put it down, because I wanted to find out what happened.
So, Kara, would you like to read a little bit from Best Day Ever?
And I, you know, this is funny because I get so shy reading my book. I realized when I saw that on the, when they're going to ask you to read your book, I'm like, oh, no. But, okay, I've read it on the radio before, so, you know, bear with me if I'm going too fast and just say slow down or something. But okay. So I figured I'd start at the beginning, if that's okay with you guys.
That sounds perfect.
All right. So this is the first few pages of Best Day Ever. I glance at my wife as she climbs into the passenger seat, sunlight bouncing off her shiny blonde hair like sparklers lit for the 4th of July, and I'm bursting with confidence. Everything is as it should be. Here we are, just the two of us, about to spend the weekend at our lake house. Today represents everything I've worked for, that we've built together. The sun blasts through my driver's side window with such intensity I feel the urge to hold my hand up to the side of my face to shield my eyes, even though my sunglasses are dark and should be doing the job. Under any other circumstance, on any other day, they would be, I know. But today, something is different between us. Some strange tension pulses through the still air of the car's interior. I can't see it, but it's here. I'd like to name it, discover its source, and eliminate it. Sure, this morning has been hectic. It's a Friday, and Fridays always seem the most frenzied when you have kids. Getting the boys up and dressed and then dropping them off at their immaculately landscaped and highly ranked red brick elementary school, where they will no doubt excel in first and third grade, respectively. Truth be told, though, I usually have little to do with the scenario I just outlined. Mia, my wife, handles all the tasks pertaining to the boys each morning. We're a traditional suburban household in that respect. In the morning, I make coffee, shower, dress, and leave for work before the boys awaken. Yes, mine is a quite selfish and single-minded pursuit on most days. That's another reason why today is so special. I drove the boys to school, reminded them that their babysitter would be picking them up afterwards. When I returned to the house, I put the dirty dishes in the dishwasher. I can be helpful when I want to be, although I don't want to remind Mia of this fact, as she may come to expect it. Dishes finished, I had called up the stairs to Mia, urging her to hurry. We haven't had a weekend together, just the two of us alone, for more than a year. This day was going to be just for us, and it was time to go. She called back, her voice floating like a butterfly down the stairs, asking for my help with her luggage. The next moment, I find myself lugging two huge suitcases down the grand main staircase of our home. She followed behind me with a laundry basket filled with who knows what. Staying a while, I teased. She blushed, embarrassed by her notorious overpacking, but I didn't complain. It was her day. She was free to overpack away. Once we got everything loaded into the trunk of the car.
Oh, no. We have a visitor.
Tucker and Frankie, yes. They're completely on guard. Oh, okay. Yeah, I have like signs up. Everybody quiet.
Yep, well, that's the beauty of live radio.
It is, yeah. Sorry about that. Okay.
No problem.
I had the car. Okay. Mia was just starting to relax when the dogs barked. No, just kidding. Okay. That was when my phone rang. I shouldn't have answered it, but onward. Taking the call was just one small mistake in a day that's destined to be brilliant. From the driver's seat, I finally finished syncing my phone with the car system. I find the playlist I created for my wife. All her favorite songs will play during our drive. Music is such an important part of keeping the romance alive. And now we're getting on the road. Mia turns toward me and smiles. She has a perfect smile, half-moon-shaped with glistening white teeth. My smile is more of a rectangle. No matter how hard I try, I appear to be smirking. I know that. But my teeth are perfect, thanks to the cosmetic dentist. I grin back. She loves me so much, and of course the same can be said for me. We've been together almost 10 years now. We know each other's best qualities, and we know each other's dark sides. Although, to be quite honest about it, I'm not sure Mia has what you'd call a dastardly alter ego. Her dark side is simply grumpy, and it typically only appears when she's tired or when one of our boys face a rough patch. For my part, I wonder if Mia thinks I have a dark side. Most likely, as far as she knows, I'm just her dear loving husband. Today, though, this morning, right now, she's exuding energy. It oozes from her pores, from her flawless face. It's the cause of the strange pulsing between us. You seem wound up, honey, I say. I want to pat her leg and tell her to relax, but I don't. Despite her odd mood, she is still beautiful, almost perfect in every way. Do I? I guess I'm just excited, she says, confirming my assessment while stretching her hands towards the front windshield. The diamond from her wedding ring flashes in the overbright sunshine, as if imitating her energy. Okay, me too. We've got a long drive ahead of us, so just try to relax. Let's make today the best day ever. I attempt to add the proper lilt to my voice. I need her to believe I'm just as happy and carefree as she is. That driving up to our lake house for the first time this season is the most exciting thing I could ever imagine doing on any day, ever. In that case, can I request a small detour? There's a little bakery in Port Clinton just before the turn off to Lakeside. I'd really like to stop there on the way in for croissants for tomorrow morning. Do you remember the spot? We won't arrive in time to grab croissants for breakfast today, of course, but tomorrow's almost as good, she says. Thankfully, her bright blue eyes are hidden behind dark sunglasses that match mine. When I glance at her, we can't make eye contact. Not really. I wonder if the comment about not arriving in time is directed at me and realize it is. Of course, I'm the one who took the phone call just as we were packed up ready to hop in the car and drive away. I shouldn't have. It wasn't anything new, but I had still held out hope that it would be. Instead, I spent 30 minutes on a worthless call with a headhunter and made us late. The croissants will be gone by the time we arrive at the bakery. I know this, too. Yes, I remember the place. Ugly strip mall, but sure, we'll stop. Not worried about gluten anymore, I take it. For a while, me and her Dr. Dijer thought her upset stomach, weight loss, and other intestinal issues were caused by gluten. I was relieved when she decided not to hop on that fad after giving up wheat for a few weeks with no change. She still insists on a vegetarian existence, leaving her with few choices when we go out to dinner and endless questions for the wait staff. It's annoying, but I push those thoughts away. My wife is just doing her best. Turns out gluten isn't the culprit, Mia says. She smiles. So yes, I'd love to stop if that's okay with you. Is that good? Do you guys want me to go on?
No, that's good. That's good.
Okay.
So that's Kara Ruta. She's reading from Best Day Ever. And yeah, so he seems like a pretty decent guy, a little self-centered, a little, but you know, whenever you're in somebody's head, it's going to seem self-centered because that's where you are. You're in there, in with them. But still, even in this first part, there are some hints.
There are some hints.
Yeah. So Kara, tell us about a little bit about your writing process. You said you don't plot in advance. It seems like there's two kinds of writers, particularly fiction writers. The one is the kind that writes everything really quickly and doesn't edit as they go at all. And the other one is the ones who basically don't leave a page until it's nearly as perfect as they can get it. So which one of those are you?
I'm not many things, and then I'll go back later and add to it and review it. But I kind of like to race towards the end because since I don't have the end in mind, the character kind of has to drive the story there.
So you write it like an entire first draft.
Correct.
Sort of just straight on. And do you have, like, some writers have a certain goal of number of words per day or something? Do you do anything like that?
I don't. I sound really disorganized, don't I?
No, you sound very creative.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I hopefully that's what it is. But my husband would probably tell you otherwise, looking at all my piles. He just walked by, so he's laughing at me. But the, I think the key to me is just going to my desk and showing up and having whatever words come out that day as possible. And I mean, when I'm on deadline and I have to finish something or I'm doing revisions, then I'll force myself into some sort of schedule. But when I'm in that creative phase where you're writing a new book, that just kind of comes at different times for me.
Do you don't have a certain time of day that you write?
Not really, but I'm not a morning person, so my best work usually is afternoon and evening.
Do you write every day?
Nope. But, I mean, I'm probably writing something every day, so whether it's a blog post or emails or whatever. But as far as book things, and again, it depends what phase of the writing process I'm in, but I'm not a strict, you know, wake up, go spend 2 hours on the computer type of author.
You know, when in the part you read, there's a where Paul is saying about his wife, she loves me so much, and the same can be said of me, or same can probably be said of me. And I'm wondering, does he mean that he loves himself so much?
Or yeah. What's not to love, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, I think what I've learned both through life experience and research I did for the novel is that narcissists in general and malignant narcissists in particular really do only see the world through their eyes. They don't have any empathy. So everyone in their life is just an extension of their ego. And so they're useful as long as they reflect well on them. And they're not so useful if they start uncovering their lies or start to question them.
So when you're writing, as you're getting closer to the end, do you, I guess it's like, how do you know when you've reached the end?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess, you know, all stories should hopefully have an arc, and I usually know by the climax of the story, you know, tells you what the, you know, the focal point of the story is. And from there, it's just kind of, you know, if you imagine like going up the hill, and then from there, it's just kind of rolling back down. So it has like a natural end to it if it all comes together well, if that answers the question. I'm just imagining it in my head. But I feel like once the, you know, once the big scene happens where the final twist comes to play, then everything should resolve itself pretty well after that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, when you get to that point, you get to the final scene, and this is what everything's been building towards, but you didn't necessarily know it until, like, when you're writing that scene, or have you figured it out at some point along the way?
I think I'm maybe one step ahead of the character. Not always for every scene, but as far as the arc goes, I might have figured out where he was going, where Paul was going, before he got there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm like one step ahead of him, but then he'll surprise me too. Like when I was writing and he started mentioning green beans, I had no idea why he was mentioning that. So I had to write down, uh-oh, he's lying about green beans. So I just kind of kept a list of his lies.
When you get to that, to the climax of the story, do you then find that you need to go back and modify things to make that maybe there were things that needed to be in earlier.
Totally. Yeah. The art of editing astounds me. I mean, it can bring such great wisdom and insight all the way along the story, especially to somebody who's a pantser, as they call it, like me, who's not prone to outline. The right editor coming in and saying, oh, if he just thought this earlier, or if this, you know, that's where all that, that's where the, I guess, science of it comes more to play.
Did you say a pantser like you?
Yeah.
Because you write by the seat of your pants?
Seat of your pants, exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was wondering about
that. Yeah, they're plotters and pantsers, and I'm a pantser.
So, how long, like in the time that you spend on working on a book, how long is writing the first draft and how much is the editing?
Gosh, that all depends on how strong the voice is inside my head. So, I mean, with Best Day Ever, it came really quickly. The first draft was probably 5 months, and that's fast. So I don't expect lightning to strike again like that for a while. I mean, I hope it does, but I mean, that's when it's just really flowing and Paul's driving fast, and yeah, it was really fun. But again, that's just the first draft, and that there's right. A lot more work to be done after that.
So would you say that you spend more time on the editing than the first draft? And is it as fun for you? Is editing as fun, or is the first draft the fun part?
First draft. Because you can kind of tell from my enthusiasm wanes. I'm learning to embrace the, like I said, I mean, my editor was amazing on this story on Best Day Ever, and I learned so much from her, but I'm definitely, I'm a speedy person. So when someone says, wait, why don't you step back and think about this more? I'm like, nah, I'm finished with that. But like her insights help so much. So it's, yeah, I'm learning. See, old dog, new tricks. It's all good.
So the hard part then for some people is you've got this draft and you're editing, but you can edit forever.
You can.
Nothing's ever perfect. It can always be better. So how do you know when to stop, when it's good enough?
When my editor says, okay, you're done. Seriously. Because like, I would say, like, for me, in my way of writing and being in the world, every time I send her back her changes from the, whatever, however many rounds we went through, I'm like, okay, I'm finished, yes. And she's like, well, I just have a couple more things.
Oh. Okay,
that's the painful part of the process. But like I said, I'm learning to embrace. That's all good.
Now, people that self-publish, do they not have an editor, or how does that work?
Oh, they totally should, yes. I mean, editors are crucial to no matter what you do. So when I published my own books, I always had the best editor I could afford, and a copy editor and a proofreader and all the stuff that you need to go through, or that you do go through when you have a publisher publishing your book. You need to do the same thing, because that's what gave self-publishing a bad name when it was first galloping out of the gates, where a lot of people were just throwing up first drafts and, posting books. Just because you have the power to do it yourself doesn't mean you shouldn't do the best you can do.
Yeah, well, I have a granddaughter that does editing and seems to be pretty successful at it, so.
Yeah, but you're right, because a lot of times some writers will choose to self-publish because they don't want to be edited, and that's a mistake.
I'm sorry, you guys broke up for a minute there.
Okay, I said there are some writers who will choose self-publishing because they don't want to be edited. They don't, and that's a mistake, I think.
I think so too. You learn from another set of eyes on your work, and there's no way you can write a 80,000-word document and not need some other input on that. There's just no way.
Now, you said you have a beta reader?
I do. I have. I'm really lucky. My daughter is a screenwriter, so she is a great beta reader. She will read and give me notes, and then I have a great friend in Dallas who she leads a whole literary group on Facebook, and she reads so many books every day. I don't even know how many, and so she's the one that encouraged me to force my agent to read Best Day Ever. So, yeah, it's great to have kind of a little tribe of people that support you, because writing can be kind of a lonely pursuit too.
Have you ever had your own writer's group?
Over the years I have had different kind of formations of that, but right now I don't. It's more like a virtual support system in a sense. So it's not anybody I meet with in person. It's all online, except my daughter.
Well, it sounds like you've got it covered, that you do have, you do have the input. At what point in your writing process do you start to solicit feedback?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think I'm learning that earlier is okay, but because especially for someone like me who's not plotting books out, you don't want anybody to dash your character's dreams too early. So that's why I kind of gallop through to get as much completed as possible before I send it to somebody to read, because I don't want them to I don't even know how to explain it. I don't want them to deflate my character's drive. That makes sense? by saying something like, I didn't really like this, or I didn't like that, that can just make my character go, bleh, and then she's done.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Kara Ruta, author of Best Day Ever. Have you ever had a character that you started with and the drive, and they did lose the drive midway and you just sort of left them there?
Yep. And you just gotta put that one away. Sorry, you petered out, you could not carry on. Yeah. It's sad, but it has to be done. You just stick a fork in it. Goodbye.
Now, it seems like most books, there's some autobiographical element in them. Is there anything of you in here?
Well, like I said, I had a really long and illustrious string of really bad narcissistic bosses. So that definitely a lot of, I mean, some of Paul's phrases verbatim were probably stuck in my head from some of those guys. So that's, I guess that would be from my life, kind of in a weird way, informing Paul. And I do, I've always, I guess I've always been a big, a feminist, and it seems like a weird book to be showcasing women power, but if you read it, I think you'll find that embedded in there. So in that sense, yes. And I am a product of the suburbs, where I'm just fascinated by the fact that the perfect couple is the perfect illusion. So that's all of that.
I like that. The perfect couple is the perfect illusion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
So, Kara, you're are you going to stay in this genre for a while, or do you have other plans?
Yeah, I really like this genre. I mean, as long as I can keep coming up with enough twists to keep readers like you guys going, oh, yeah, I stayed up all night reading it, then I'll stay. The key. Yeah, when somebody, I mean, that's the best, biggest compliment, when somebody says, I couldn't put it down, or I stayed up too late reading, that makes my heart happy. So if I can keep doing that, I love this genre or whatever, this category of fiction. And I like, I really like it here, so I hope to stay for a while.
Now, the Best Day Ever, as you mentioned, is written in first person from the point of view of Paul Strom, who is an unreliable narrator. Have you always written in first person?
No, I like first person present the best, and that's, again, like my preferred writing style. Some of my books have been third person, so I've written so much, so many different books that I, but my preferred writing style is first person.
Were there any special challenges about writing from a male point of view?
Yeah, actually, and you know, I when I thought back on it, I think the 2.5 years that I spent writing romance really helped me with that, because I hadn't felt comfortable in writing from a male perspective. And with romance, at least in my romance stories, it would flip between the woman and the male protagonist. So I had to start writing from a male's perspective. And so oddly, writing romance helped me write a really bad, malignant, narcissist character in first person and kind of get into the head of a male character.
Wow. And as you move forward, are you going to continue with that? Or do you also like writing from the female point of view?
Yeah, I can't see doing another male first person right away, because Paul is exhausting. So I think I'll switch back to writing from a woman.
Now, did Paul scare you at all?
No, but I hope he scares the reader.
His
point is to scare you, so
I'm just curious if you ever, you know, were like this guy is so terrible, and those feelings sort of got projected onto your husband or other men in your life.
No, but you know, I will tell you, I was doing some research and I found myself all of a sudden in this chat room that was for women who were survivors of narcissists, And so I'm in there reading these horrible stories and these women helping each other get out of these relationships. And in pops a narcissist, a guy, and he starts defending the actions of all these men. He didn't even know. It wasn't his story. And that was chilling. Like, it still makes the hair on my neck stand up, that just the lack of empathy, the lack of self-realization, the fact that he was in this place that was supposed to be safe for women who had survived this kind of a relationship, and there he was. Yeah. So that kind of thing was chilling.
How you mentioned that you did some research for this book. Tell us a little bit about your research process, and do you do it like up front or as questions come up as you're writing?
It's more as questions come up while writing. You know, whether it's, we used to live in Ohio, like I said, I lived there for most of my life, and so I knew the community well and the neighborhood, and we had a cottage up in Lakeside where the second, you know, half of the story takes place, and this charming Chautauqua community, but I hadn't been there for 10 or so years, so I did research on the setting to make sure I still remembered it right, and, you know, that kind of thing, and then as well as, I don't know what his diagnosis is clearly for Paul. People have their own, and I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm not even going to venture to guess. But I did know for sure that he was a narcissist, and the more research I did, I realized he was a malignant narcissist. So I did research that a bit.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like that would be important. So what about Mia? You know, how present was she as you were writing her?
Yeah, that was the fun part, because she was there for the whole story, but she couldn't say what she really wanted to say, right?
Right, right.
That was really the fun of the story as well, is to how do you portray a woman who's actually stronger than you think she is, but not giving anything away from her comments. So it was kind of, trying to keep her mouth shut when she wanted to talk, because she really wanted to talk a lot of times, and, you know, but she couldn't. So, yeah, that was fun, too.
Now, you know, Paul refers to his childhood, and it seems like he may have been abused. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that, you know, were you at all sympathetic towards him, or want the reader to be sympathetic towards him because of that?
I mean, he is a monster, and a lot of people were triggered by him, and some readers couldn't, you know, had to put him down, which is sad, and I feel sorry that they even thought they should read a book like this, but I think every person that we encounter in life, there's some redeeming quality, or there was, and giving him a little shadow of sympathy from what he grew up with was important to me.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes I think, if you go into our prison system today, such a large number of men in prison were abused as children.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, isn't there some way to stop this cycle?
No.
And it seemed, and actually you kind of are dealing with this, because at the end, Mia's talking about her sons and watching for symptoms,
right,
in her sons.
And from all the research I've done, and I was a magazine reporter in Columbus, Ohio for a long time too, and one of my most, I guess, important stories that I wrote was about, I got to interview 7 or 8 women of the 30 or so that were pardoned by Governor Celeste from death row. They were convicted for murdering their spouses or boyfriends, but they were pardoned by him because it was domestic violence. And that was, you know, that was the first acknowledgement of domestic violence and what it does to people, and that these women were, they had to kill these people in self-defense. So anyway, so I was interviewing murderers, and I mean, these women were convicted murderers but pardoned. And when I talked to the prison officials as well about the men that had been involved in these crimes, he said by the time that they get to the prison, most of them just can't be rehabilitated. So it's got to start young. It's got to start when they're children, and trying to help these kids, because once you've matured into this kind of monster, it's very hard for them to change.
Yeah, and they become such good liars.
To themselves.
The best.
Yeah. That it's hard to even know if somebody has changed.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the counselor at in the prison that I talked to, he said these guys never change in his experience.
And yet you don't want to, you don't want to think that, because you want to always think that there is a chance for redemption.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And there's always an exception, right?
Right. Yeah. So... on that happy note. You are working on your next novel?
I'm, yes, but I can't tell you about it because it will hurt my character, so... But
you're still in the first draft.
We are.
Yep. And when should we look forward to publication? Any idea? You've got a timeline,
now
a deadline?
It's slotted for winter of 2018, which, as you can tell from my rapid fire publication pace up to this point, is like a really long gap for me, but learning to be patient, like I told you.
But for most writers, a book a year is actually pretty fast.
Right, and that's kind of the pace I was on. So now my publisher's like, no, you have to wait for the paperback to come out. I'm like, oh no, I didn't even know about that. So the paperback comes out in August of this year, and then I guess my next book gets to come out after that.
Okay, and when was the hardcover published?
In September of 2017.
Great. So it's been out. You've got a number of readers. It sounds like you're getting great feedback.
It's been, knockwood, just really great. And so fun to have people say, wow, I stayed up all night reading it. That's really been fun.
Well, Kara, we're out of time. And I want to thank you so much for being with us on Writers' Voices.
Oh, well, thank you. And I had a great time talking to you guys.
And we look forward to your next book. And actually, I'm going to have to go back and check out some of your previous books, too.
Yes.
So that's Kara Ruda, KAIRARUDA. She has a website and a blog online. And, Mom, do you have some closing words for us?
Yes, I do. As Kara alluded to earlier, everyone has a story, including chapters from childhood, happenings to the present. So why not write your story?
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you, guys. Great talking to you.
Great talking to you. And stay tuned now if you're listening on Friday for Planet Earth's Wild with James Moore. If you're listening on Monday morning, have a great week. And also check out writersvoices.com and KRUUFM.com. See you next week on Writers' Voices. Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.